Howdy, listener, and thanks for tuning into our podcast, The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. My name is Izzy.
And my name is David. Each week, one of us will pick a movie that the other has not seen. We will deep dive into our individual takes and historical background of the movie.
Please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at TML A Journey Through Cinema and Twitter at TML A Journey. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. This week, we look at two Westerns that are both classic in structure and are examples of being modern takes of the genre. We are going to discuss Silverado from 1985 and News of the World from 2020. Silverado is directed by Lawrence Kasdan, starring Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Kevin Costner, Danny Glover, Jeff Goldblum, Linda Hunt, Rosanna Arquette, and Brian Dennehy. News of the World was directed by Paul Greengrass, starring Tom Hanks and Helena Zengel. Silverado centers around Emmett, played by Scott Glenn, assembling a group of misfit cowboys, played by Kevin Costner, Kevin Kline, Danny Glover. After helping a group of settlers track down a pack of thieves, Emmett and his group descend on the troubled town of Silverado to seek their fortunes. Soon after arriving, they discover that the town has fallen into the grasp of a greedy rancher and a corrupt sheriff, with whom many of Emmett's men have unfinished business. News of the World, for those who may not know, takes place 5 years after the end of the Civil War. Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd crosses paths with a 10-year-old girl taken from the Kiowa people. Forced to return to her aunt and uncle, Kidd agrees to escort the child across the harsh and unforgiving plains of Texas. However, the long journey soon turns into a fight for survival as the traveling companions encounter danger at every turn, both human and natural.
All right, so I picked these movies for a few reasons. The first being that we're having trouble tracking down one of the films that was available when we made our list and now is no longer streaming. So we're going to try to go find it again in a different format. Second, I have really fond memories of watching Silverado when I was a kid in the movie theater. We'll get to that story in a second. And third, I've always wanted to watch Tom Hanks in a Western, because I know he's been trying to make a Western for a long time. He'd been attached to a couple different projects that were Westerns, and this is finally his first Western, so it's kind of cool. So I have this very fond memory of seeing Silverado when I was 15. I was visiting my grandmother for the summer, and she drove my brother and I to the movie theater so we can go catch a movie, you know, as a lazy summer activity. And we went in, and the cool thing was we were running a little bit late. It was no big deal, but we were just running a little bit late. And they actually went ahead and like paused the movie because they hadn't started it yet. And since we were the only two people that were there to see the movie.
Well, you've told me this story before.
Yeah. And so they paused it and we were able to get our popcorn and everything. And we walked in and my brother and I were literally the only ones in the movie theater. It was a huge movie theater, too. Beautiful movie theater. And we got to watch Silverado by ourselves, eating popcorn. And it was a good adventure story. And I really enjoyed it. So I have that fond memory of not only visiting my grandmother that summer, but also watching this movie and having the people in the movie theater. Because it was, we were in another town. And they just kind of like said, oh, yeah, sure. And they just paused it really quick. Got our popcorn, and we got to watch a movie. It was kind of fun. It was back in the day when things weren't so digitalized and all that kind of stuff, and there was actually projectionists and all that stuff, so it was kind of cool. And so that's why I wanted to watch it again.
So when you usually talk about Westerns, you do have this, when we usually have a conversation, you have this love for the late 1970s to early 1980s Western films.
Well, no, I have a love for a lot of Westerns. They're different eras. There's the 60s through the 80s, I have a love for different reasons than I like the ones from the 30s and the 40s. And then I consider the at post-war era, the late 40s through the early 60s, another era in Westerns. There's definitely sections of Westerns. There's definite different eras, but I understand what you're saying, that I have a love for those late 60s through the 80s.
Why do you think that is? So why do you want to talk about these films?
So the reason I like the movies from the 60s, late 60s through the, I would say the mid 80s, is because they are reexamining the Western myth. There's a lot of shift going on in studios. There's a lot of shift going on culturally. There's a lot of shift going on in how we're looking at the myths that made America. And so that, of course, is being reexamined in the Western. And the Western was like a really good way of telling stories, like where you get to reexamine the American myth, like how we became American or different parts of it. So there's a lot of great Westerns made at that time where they're basically get to reexamine what's going on. And the revisionism that they're doing, where they're really going back and looking at, was Wyatt Earp the hero? Was, you know, that kind of stuff. Was making the railroads and this manifest destiny great? How we treated Native Americans, was that really the way that we should have been treating Native Americans? And all that stuff was happening, and it's reflecting in those films. So at different times. So, and different films tackle them differently. So I thought that's why I like that era. And that's why we're talking about these films, because both of these films are made after that era. And they're basically going back to that, the structure being very traditional, but they have an awareness of what all that those films from the 60s through the early 80s basically was talking about, was like, there's parts of this myth that are very uncomfortable. There's parts of this myth that we have to wrap our heads around. We treated a whole people very badly to make sure that we could take over this land. And we took it over. It wasn't like we walked in and it was just there for the taking. There were already people living here and things like that. There were people who were reexamining all those things and how that was being portrayed in the movies. You had like movies like Little Big Man and other things like that were showing that. But these films were made with that consciousness, being aware of that kind of stuff. So they were still making a tradition. They were still making structurally a traditional Western, but being aware that you can't tell the story without including certain people or showing that there's a much deeper landscape and a much deeper story here than just good guy rides in on a horse, shoots the bad guy, and rides away.
Like we usually see with John Wayne.
Well, I think ironically, one of the first films that he made, one of the last films that he made with John Ford, was one of the first films that really started to reexamine the myth of the West. A lot of people point to John Wayne and John Ford as the people that kind of like cemented the myth of the West through cinema, the cinematic West. In our world nowadays, where we have like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, back then we probably would have called it the Western Cinematic Universe. Like these things didn't really happen, but they were the myth that we created about the West.
Yeah, the revisionism.
Yeah. So they basically said, this is how we did it. And he made a movie. They made a movie towards the end of his career with Jimmy Stewart called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And the whole movie is about how myths are created and how the people who really do the work, how we see things, how we portray things in history is not necessarily the way that things really were, and how we, the media, in the movie, the media is portrayed is by newspaper people, because that's at the media of the time of the West, bending and creating the story to fit a certain narrative. And so I think it's interesting that right towards the end of John Ford's career, John Wayne was getting older. He was still going to be around for about another 10 years, but you started to see them. Even they were going, you guys realize this is a myth. We're creating a myth here. And then I think it's one of the first films that really starts questioning the Western myth that's been put out in cinema. And I think that just kind of opened up the floodgates for other filmmakers, and younger filmmakers were starting to go, this is a myth, and we're going to examine it, and we're going to play with it. So that's why I like talking about films like this. Cause it's like you get American history, you get American history, how it's presented. America is such a young country that we have the West, the Civil War and the colonial period as our myth making parts of how our country and where our identity is set in. And the problem with that is that you have a lot of great ideas of, like, you know, strong individualism and things like that in your history, but it leads to problems when you literally whitewash parts of your history that are pretty bad.
Well, we were doing some research when we found out that there was, including like the made for TV movies, like 96 movies about Jesse James. I feel like that's a wrong number, but it was really high up there.
Yes.
And some of them were like, Jesse James, he's awesome. And you're like, is he though?
Is he though? Yeah.
Is he though? You know?
And then even Brad Pitt made that film not too long ago where they were reexamining his myth. You know, for lack of a better word, you know, what was, and then, I mean, and it was a interesting character study. And there was a movie made a while ago called The Long Riders that also was examining Jesse James. But it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, there's a lot of myths that it's like once they get told and people just kind of retell them. And it's like, that's why you have movements like what happened in the 60s and 70s where they go, let's really reexamine it. Let's turn that on its head. Let's look at that the way that it probably happened. Billy the Kid is another one that gets a lot of reexamining right now. It's happened since the late 60s, the 60s all the way through now. But there's just different, you know, examinations of like the myth where Wyatt Earp has had two major films made, you know, since Silverado came out. They did Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner, and they did Tombstone with Kurt Russell.
I have fun facts about those two movies.
I know, but it's just like one of those things that's really fun. It's like the people reexamine it, and they're talking about different things, like, and they talk about different aspects of our culture through those myths, and they're definitely more aware. And Silverado's definitely a movie you can tell is aware of things. There's African American characters in it. There's the rancher that's bad and corrupt is using the police force and the sheriff and other government things to suppress people. There's definitely certain things in that film that probably would not have been layered in if it was made in the 50s. So you can tell that it's in the absence of Native Americans in that film, I think, is also a very telling thing, because I don't think Lawrence Kasdan wanted to go near that because of the sensitivity of how would you work that into this story and be respectful. It'd be, you couldn't do it because the story was so packed full. So just don't do it. You know, where in the past you would have, you know, certain movies just, they would just be there and there'd be some lame story and it feels totally like just shoved in there, shoehorned in there, because you have to have Native Americans doing something bad in your Western. You watched Silverado. Did you feel that it was a modern film, or did you feel that of the limited, that it was more akin to the older films?
It actually reminded me of another Western that you made me watch just by accident.
I made you watch by accident?
In the sense that you clicked it on while I was on the couch and I was too lazy to move.
Okay.
called Bad Day at Black Rock.
But yeah, a modern Western that takes place just after World War II. But it's very much a Western.
Very much a Western. It came out around the same time as this?
No, it came out in the late 40s.
Oh, it did come in the late 40s. Because in my brain, they both came out at the same time because...
No, they're like...
They
they're
have
like
this very 30 similar...
30 years apart.
They have this very similar theme about them. And actually, I think they kind of share some plot points together. But it kind of... It really reminded me of Bad Day at Black Rock. Instead of being, you know, this one... Silverado was set in the traditional, quote-unquote, Western time period. And Bad Day takes place right after the war. Yet they talk about, I don't want to say literally the same things, but very similar things.
Like who has the power in the town, who's controlling people, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and also they talk about racism.
Yes.
And how people do to just hate, do terrible things to other people, and how people who do have power can help the little man.
Or how if you band together, i.e. the four cowboys that band together, how you can create a new power block, a new power structure, and challenge the power that's there. Yeah, no, I think it's one of the things, too, that this film did. It didn't, like, it wasn't, like, a major focus of the film, the racism aspect. It was there, and they dealt with it, which made it even more realistic. And, like, and Danny Glover as the cowboy who's coming in. I said before in another podcast that, statistically speaking, 1 in 4 or... 1 to 5 to 1 to 4 cowboys at any given time were probably African American and go in the West. And yet when you watch American Westerns, there's hardly any in any of the films, unless the film is purposely about ex slaves being cowboys. It's like, it's really weird. It's like, unless that's the focus of the film, they're not there. And then we're starting to see, and right after this film, there was a film that came out called Posse, and there's other films that have come out that are we're starting to see that being more and more just part of...
Right after Silverado?
Not right after. I mean, there's, you know, a couple years and then Posse, and then there's a couple more years, and there's still, in the meantime, Westerns that are traditionally all white, and it's kind of sad because there's a lot of great stories that are being overlooked. It's starting to see the diversity more and more since that.
Why should we, as an audience, re-examine the American Western myth?
Well, I think there's a couple of different reasons why. I think it's really important to look at your history and really examine your history as a people, as a nation. Because if you don't, it's not like that. That's the saying, like, you're doomed to repeat it. I do think that you will still keep making mistakes, but if you don't accept your history and accept what actually happened and accept what the fact that there was things that your country did that aren't good, as well as there are things that are pretty amazing, then you're never going to reconcile that. You're never going to put that to rest, and you're never going to be able to move on. So you're going to keep having this conversation coming up and up and up all the time of, do you realize how you created this country and who actually built this country and who was actually involved in this country, the process? It was a lot of immigrants. It was a lot of ex-slaves. Well, before that, it was a lot of slaves and then ex-slaves. And then it was a lot of people that were poor that you pushed out, and then they were forced to go into other areas and build up those areas. So there's a lot of social economic reasons why this country was built by certain people and who worked to do the labor that actually built it. And if you don't acknowledge that, then you end up with what you're having. You have people that will literally say that that's not how America was built, that, you know, that there was a bunch of people like John Wayne running around on a horse who, if you ever watch any of his movies, doesn't build a damn thing. You know, there's very few movies where he's actually a rancher or he actually has a job other than riding in a horse and being a gunfighter. Well, how do you get paid for that? even if you read the history, most gunfighters, most of the people that were famous for being good with their weapons had legitimate jobs. They were cowboys. They ran the Pony Express. They were sheriffs. Some of them were working saloons. Some of them ended up, one of the most famous ones, Bat Masterson, ended up being a sports writer for a New York newspaper. It's just, you know, they had real jobs, had real lives. And if you don't acknowledge that, then you're doomed to.
You're romanticizing yeah. something that is
not real.
Not real. And it's actually terrible to perpetuate.
Well, you're also making decisions based on what you think is a history that never existed. And so when you say, oh, that's not the way the world is, it's like, well, that the way that the world is actually much more complicated, and you have to accept it. So that's why reexamining your myths and things like that. You see that happening all the time with like plays like Shakespeare being reexamined and reestablished and re-performed in different ways and different interpretations. And you see people going back and reading old literature or in other countries reexamining old poetry and things like that and going, oh, this is what our history, and this is what they were talking about. And then they end up making peace with the fact that some of these people weren't in their history that were at one point lauded as these great citizens weren't great people. They killed a lot of people. They made decisions that killed a lot of people, but they just come to understand that was the person. The person had problematic issues, but that was the history. You have to accept it. So that's why I like going back and watching, reading, studying history.
No matter how they want to tell you, history is not as simple as a man on a horse coming into a town and shooting the bad guy. Because both of those characters in real life are just as complicated as you and I, are real as you and I. And, you know, sometimes the winner isn't. The good right. isn't right. And so.
Well, those stories. So the Western, that mythos of the lone stranger coming in and solving the problem, that evolved into, well, we see that now in films. We don't see as many Westerns, but that's basically the storyline of Iron Man, Superman, Batman. It's basically, that's our entertainment. They've just shifted it into a universe that is completely made up, so you can't argue about how it's being portrayed. And the lone stranger comes in, cleans it up, moves on. But it's basically the Western myth. It used to be cops in the 80s and 90s, same idea. And I just find it very interesting that we need that myth because we've had that myth all the way back to the ancient Greeks. You have Hercules, Jason, Theseus, heroes that did these things. The hero myth is not anything new. And that's just in Western culture. You can go to other cultures and there's a hero myth there. But unfortunately, we have taken our hero myth and combined it with our history and act like that's real. Like our history in the West is a hero myth. And it's like, wait, no, those are two different things. And so that's why I like it when we go back and we re-examine these things. Like in Silverado, there isn't one hero. There's four of them. You know, and they all represent different parts of the hero. And in News of the World, your hero is a much more realistic, damaged person who fought in the Civil War. He barely is making a living going from town to town, reading the news to people. And he's not. And you find out the reason why he's traveling out in the world is because he doesn't want to go home because he lost his wife to a cholera epidemic. So he doesn't want to go home. There's nothing there for him. That's why he ends up on the road and ends up with a young girl that was taken by the Kiowa during a raid. And then her Kiowa family had adopted her. She lived with her 6 years, is then killed by another raid by the U.S. cavalry. So she's lost two families.
Are you going to switch over to the News of the World now?
You probably should.
Okay, because I have questions. Hey, so I was been thinking about this, and tell me if I'm on a little tangent. When I was watching it, I didn't connect with it as much as I connected with Silverado. And I love Tom Hanks, and I really do, and I really thought the story was, it was really sweet. But I have a thought.
All right.
So, Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd was...
We'll just call him Captain Kidd.
Okay, Captain Kidd is stated to have fought...
For the Civil War. I mean, for the Confederacy during the Civil War.
Confederacy in the Civil War.
For the Texas Infantry.
Do you think that this movie uses Tom Hanks's character's kindness to brush his racist past underneath the rug? Or do you think that this movie is a form of redemption arc or hero's journey for Kid?
I think the thing is that one of the things about you're saying about, does it use his Tom Hanks niceness to cover up his racism? He does nothing in the movie that is overtly racist. So I think that's another thing that you're assuming that because he fought for the Confederacy, he was a racist because that was but at that time in our history, what we would consider racist was pretty prevalent through all of America. So if you even were a good person in the North, the West, the chances of you having what we would consider racist viewpoints were pretty high. So I think that's kind of the thing. I think what they were really focused more on with Tom Hanks' character is the focus of this is somebody who's struggled, who has and has had major losses in his life, because you got to assume that when he fought the war, some of his friends died in the war, and that you also have to assume that losing his wife was a big, big blow to him. And so he has a completely, he's a shell of himself. And of course, finding the new family, which is this girl who, and just kind of gets forced upon him. And then he ends up slowly rescuing. And of course the story is that she rescues him too. So I think that's the focus, is that his decency as a character gets reborn through the film, through the story arc of the film. Well, no, I think it's a good question. I think it's a good question. Like, sometimes there is that fact of where you see it in films all through history, where the actor playing the role is such a good guy or a decent guy, that we kind of blow over the fact that, wait a minute, if he's here in this spot, he obviously did some things that were bad in his past.
Yes.
And I understand what you're trying to say about that. Like, did they use Tom Hanks' decency as an actor and as just a person to kind of cover up some of the rough parts of that character?
So there's this character played by Helena Zengel that is a German immigrant, I believe.
Yeah, so, it's kind of what we talked about a little bit earlier, where people who immigrated to America would then keep going into the West. And so the West was founded, a lot of the places in the West have huge, like Dutch roots or German roots or Scandinavian roots in Middle America and in Wisconsin or
that's one of the reasons
Nebraska or just random places where you end up with these huge areas that have like, this is a German community. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons why in Silicon Valley towards Silicon Valley in California, you get a huge Irish population / huge Irish roots, is because that is where the Irish immigrants came from or went to, not came from. They went to.
And a lot of them also came, they didn't just come in through New York. I mean, our mentality is that they come in from the North.
From Ellis Island.
Ellis Island. Well, Ellis Island at this point, I don't believe was active. Ellis Island was, but from the, Philadelphia, New York, Boston coming in, those are, that's kind of our mental picture of that. But a lot of immigrants came into the South and came in through the Gulf of Mexico. So there's a lot of that stuff too. There's immigrants coming in through a lot of different ports in our country. And then they would keep going until they could get a parcel of land, and it usually was, you know, sometimes it was like this story. There was obviously a group of Germans that came over, and they founded a town, a township, a farmland that was a German community in Texas.
Well, in both movies, both Silverado and News of the World, center around towns that were created in a very similar way.
Yeah. So there's a wagon train in Silverado that goes, that's bringing people from the, Silverado's was more of a generic wagon train that was people from the East Coast going west to start a new life, where in News of the World, it was obviously a community that uprooted from Europe somewhere and came over and started a community in America.
So she is part of this group of German immigrants, but when we first meet her, she believes, acts, and wants to stay with the Kiowa people.
Yeah, that's her family. And so what happened is, off camera, before the movie started, you assume the place where she lived with her Kiowa family was, as the army puts it in the movie, disbanded. I think it's what they use, the term they use. And they basically took out the village.
They killed a bunch of people.
She was found at that point, and she was being taken back to her uncle and aunt.
So I was wondering how the indigenous population might view this movie differently than I would have. And so I did some research, and there was an organization of indigenous writers who do this blog, and I'll post it down below. And I thought it was very interesting that they thought this movie was, a fair representation. They were a little poignant on the fact that it was, they focused to choose on a blonde, white, blue-eyed girl. Well, it is history, and they're talking about certain history facts. But the thing that made me interested into reading this article was that they chose one of the scenes that they found that was stereotypical Native American, BS, was the scene where she was eating beans. Because they were trying to show, the scene that they were trying to show is that she's, out of
her wild.
She's out of her comfort zone. She's a fish out of water. She's not like these other people. But by doing that, they made her, in these writers' view, look like a dirty hooligan.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a very interesting take on this movie, because even though this movie is taking that myth that we were talking about, spinning it on its head and actually showing you what happened in real life and things like that, they still choose to tell the story in kind of these stereotypical beats.
Yeah, I understand that. Basically saying that because she lived with the Kiowa, she wouldn't have any table manners. And they're pointing that out, and as a negative, I do know that they had a woman on set that trained Helena on Kiowa traditions and things like that. And they had another gentleman that was a consultant. I've forgotten their names that were there to really make sure that they were being doing it correctly and being respectful and they weren't just making up Native American culture or blending Native American cultures together from different groups to, who cares? Who's going to know? They actually worked and focused on that. So I do know that they were on set. And that is one of those things that it's a beat that I see in a lot of movies that, I think at some points you just gotta go, why are you putting that in there? There's other ways to show people are hungry, that show people are, may not have table manners or may not understand, and that would be much more interesting than just doing that. And unfortunately, that using what a filmmaker might just say, that's just shorthand, everybody will catch it, what can be interpreted by other people as you're showing everybody that we're uncouth and don't know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like That's why you need to have people on set and being consultant and think about things that you're doing. Because what you to you is a throwaway scene, like a throwaway just really quick, can really affect somebody and affect people in the wrong way. You look at News of the World, you look at Silverado, and one of the things I really did, there's two different things. We treated Silverado really seriously. The one thing that I really enjoy about Silverado is that it's really fun. It's playing with the myth. You can see the actors playing with it, like almost like you can almost see it on scene, like on the camera, like I'm supposed to be the silent type, but he'll still crack jokes and things like that. And so they're really playing with it, having fun with the structure. And News of the World is a much more serious film, but there's still humor in the film, which I thought was good. Cause I think sometimes when you make serious films and you take away all the humor, it makes them dry. It doesn't make the characters realistic either. You know? So I think it's funny. I thought it was good that they brought some of that humor in. I also thought it was interesting that, the two main bad guys that Tom Hanks has to fight and deal with are not at the end of the movie, which traditionally is the Western. You have the big shootout, big thing at the end.
Like you see in Silverado.
It builds all the way to I like to think of Silverado as the snowball that's rolling down the hill. And by the end, it's picked up so much speed, so much mass. It's the big thing, and it smashes in. To the ending, because it's like it starts off really slow, and you see it build and build and build and build, and then the very end is there's no way around for these characters to get out of this.
That's a really interesting way to think about it, because I always think about Westerns that have the big shootout at the end as like video games,
like the boss,
like when we watched our first episode ever for this podcast, we watched.
Bite the Bullet.
And to me, I felt that was kind of like.
There's no shootout.
And so when I was like, but he punched that generic doofus in the face, which should lead to him, you know, punching a bad guy sidekick or a henchman, which leads to the big shootout, kind of like steps, like in a video game. And then that didn't happen. And I was like, poof. And. So for Silverado,
again, a movie made in the '70s that was re-examining the Western myth.
So Silverado, in my brain, I kept viewing it like, oh, he punched the random doofus in the face, which will lead into the henchman. Oh, it led into the henchman, which led into the big boss. And so I kind of view him as video game.
One thing that Lawrence Kasdan is really good with is characters and.
What else has he directed in?
He did like right before this, he did The Big Chill and he did Body Heat. So Big Chill. So that's another thing too, is he also casts people to be certain characters in his film. Like he brought in Danny Glover and he brought in Scott Glenn because they were going to fit a certain type in his film. But he also brought in Kevin Kline because he worked with him on, and Jeff Goldblum because he worked with him on The Big Chill. And Kevin Costner. Kevin Costner's in The Big Chill, but nobody knows about it because he's the dead body at the beginning and nobody ever sees him because they cut out all the flashback scenes. And so as a favor to him, so for being a good sport of having one of his first parts, then losing it, he brought him in to play the young brother of Scott Glenn. But he also brought in like John Cleese to be the British sheriff. He is playing with your expectations of what should be in a Western.
Yeah, also for the fact that I think his casting is really good, because I think this could also be a shallow reading while I was watching this movie.
Yeah.
But based on the people that I know who are in this movie, I thought that because they were cast in these certain parts, they would be playing the character differently.
Like Jeff Goldblum?
Like Jeff Goldblum, John Cleese, Kevin Costner and Kevin Kline and Danny Glover. In my mind, they're all very comedic actors.
For this, Kevin Kline's big movies were dramas, the last one being The Big Chill. And Scott Glenn wasn't really well known at that point. I mean, he had parts, but he was not like a lead at that point, from what I remember. Kevin Costner, of course, this was his big first big role. And so people didn't know him as that comedy action that he would later do in some of his earlier films. But he would eventually go serious. But people, Kevin Kline and Danny Glover, were kind of in the more serious roles. And so when you saw a little bit more humor from them in this movie, especially Kevin Kline, people didn't realize that Kevin Kline could be that funny.
Would you recommend these films, Dan?
I would. I think both films are, if you're into Westerns, it's ironic. Both films had positive reviews from people who don't like Westerns for different reasons. They're good films to get into the Western genre because not only have some of the classic structure in there and the classic storytelling, but they are good entry points because they are playing around with that. They're not so steeped in this Western tradition that the story isn't fun or doesn't tell something that's interesting. So you said you weren't going to recommend it, but do you have a favorite of the two? I find it kind of interesting that you don't want to recommend either one. Like, neither one of them you think are good?
No, I think they're really good. It's just, I can appreciate the skill that went into both of these films and making these films. And I do like some scenes and I like the themes. And there are some points from each film that I really enjoy. So, it's hard for me to recommend films that I don't full-heartedly stand behind.
Okay.
I appreciate the skill and the love and the Western myth breaking. I did mention before that I think that these movies are important. I just don't think they're important to me.
Okay.
So which one is your favorite?
My favorite is probably News of the World. Like, but the nostalgic memories that are wrapped around the Silverado will always keep it in a special part of my heart. So
we hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe and leave a review, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Or you can follow us on Instagram at TML, A Journey Through Cinema. On Twitter at TML, A Journey. Or on Facebook under @TheMovieLog1. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.